shorts and bag.
That's a nasty looking finger, lady.
You got the bait?
What? No.
Hey, I got your fertilizer.
We made you.
Welcome back, interweb friends. This is Stop the Movie I Want to Get Out. Hollywood makes bad movies. We make fun of them. I'm Alex Dunbar. Joined this week, as always, by Cody Wolf.
If a snake had ears, would you screw it?
Yeah, that scene was rife with quotes. Jack Estabrook.
I think Skit is my favorite part of hunting down the Bigfoot.
And Christy Smore.
I really wanted to do one of those, but I cannot do an Australian accent. Yeah. Not that it was a great Australian accent in the movie either, but
it's true.
I just can't do it.
I thought you were going to insult mine. I appreciate it.
It's better than what I could do.
That's pretty good. Jack's accent work actually has been consistently great.
Jack does a lot of accent work, though.
Yeah.
I
just want to say, I don't know what number this episode is, but I'm really excited because we've probably done 100 and...
It's like 140-something.
140-something right episodes. This is the first time I can genuinely say this. I kind of liked this movie. In fact, there was a big chunk of this movie that I liked a lot. And I was shocked as I was watching it. I'm like, oh my God, I am going to be the Andy Wolf. This movie has concerns that I think we're all going to address. But there was a big chunk of this movie that I legit... enjoyed.
I thought it was far better than what its poster made it look like.
It certainly had a really good cast. These are talented people in this movie.
I was shocked.
And it was just very corny. And I was like, why did they all get in on this? I appreciate that they did, but why?
The movie was well made for what it was, and it's got at names in it and stuff, but like Chrissy said with the poster, the marketing, I watched the trailer, and the trailer is there's a typo in the trailer, first of all.
Not a good sign.
No.
Yeah.
And it makes a point to say that it's a small Massachusetts town or something. Or not Massachusetts, but New England town.
Yeah.
But they never say that in the movie. In the movie, you can clearly say see New York plates and New York registrations and stuff. And they never say where it takes place. So I don't know why the trailer went out of its way to say this was weird marketing.
There's choices that I am still I watched this 2 days ago, and I've consistently for 2 days been thinking about it, and I'm still mystified by a couple of things about this movie.
Well, I remember reading articles since it was shot not too far away.
We should say that we all live in upstate New York, and this movie was shot
in
Hamilton, it's about an hour away from Syracuse.
And I remember, so because of that, it was in our news, and I remember hearing that there was supposed to be, or maybe in the original stages of it, some sort of connection to It's a Wonderful Life.
Which they're...
A little bit.
The end is really the only...
Yeah.
Because I had to remind myself what the name of the town was in It's a Wonderful Life, because I thought at some point the movie was supposed to be a sequel, it was supposed to be in the same town, but it wasn't, because the name of the movie is Pottersville. Yeah.
Which also makes it doubly weird because, and now we're getting upstate New York film nerdy, but Seneca Falls, which is about an hour west of Syracuse,
the opposite direction,
is the town that Bedford Falls in It's a Wonderful Life is based on.
Yep.
This movie was shot about an hour east of Syracuse, but has this weird, there was a part of me that's why wasn't this movie shot in Seneca Falls if that's the link that they wanted to make? I can't imagine Seneca Falls, by the way, would have said no, but...
Before we get much further, I want to say this is the first film we've ever done for a podcast where I actually had visited the set while they were making the film.
Oh, cool. Yeah.
Yes, I was when they did a casting call. I recognized that little plaza where they were shooting it. There was a crowd of people. They were probably prepping to shoot the scene where the reporter is doing the live shot where the town is ooh, there's a Bigfoot. And he walks by, though I didn't see any celebrities.
It's always kind of surreal, I think, when you see a movie that was shot in a place you know very well, but that you know not from a filming location place, but just a place that you know. I grew up outside Boston, so when I would see a Good Will Hunting or Witches of Eastwick, some of which was shot in my hometown, it was always a little whoa, that's weird. So I was watching this, I've been to Hamilton for work tons of times, and I'm whoa, that's weird to just be watching Michael Shannon walking around Hamilton, and they didn't really dress Hamilton very much. You're just like, oh yeah, I know right where that is. All right, and the movie is, I'm sure it's in the title, Pottersville, on Netflix now. I maybe only on Netflix now. I don't know where else this is available.
Did it get a wide release? It doesn't look like it did.
I thought it was supposed to.
I knew they were making it. I knew that Ron Perlman was involved in the project. That's all I knew.
Yep.
That's, and I just didn't hear anything about it. It didn't sound trailer, like it would be a blockbuster.
The trailer did say in theaters November 2017 or something like that.
Did it? Maybe it had a small theatrical run. It feels like this Netflix appearance is the big... I think this was their big splash was Netflix. Mm-hmm. I don't even know if I remember it playing around here.
I don't think it did.
Yeah. And since it was shot here, that's not a great sign. I guess it starts off with, and this is going to be, I think for all of us here, this is kind of weird because I'm watching it. It starts off with some very winter in upstate New York-esque footage, which I'm just looking at it and I'm like,
It's nice to see that when you watch a movie and it's like, that is what upstate New York looks like. There you go.
It's covered in snow.
Covered
in snow. It's just the openings, they're driving. There's one thing. I appreciated it was a Christmas movie because the ending was really touching and I liked that idea. When we get to it, obviously, I'm really fast-forwarding ahead. But for a big chunk of the movie, I forgot it was a Christmas movie.
Yeah.
Well,
Christmas really didn't.
It was like it doesn't play into the plot until the very end of the film, which didn't even need to necessarily be Christmas time. It was just kind of like a tender, sweet kind of giving back message.
I'd like to do one thing before we even get into the plot. I'd like to, and there's no wrong answers to this because my brain is trying to unravel this itself. What do each of you think the goal of this movie was? Because at one point, I thought they were trying to make a satire of like those Hallmark Channel like Christmas movies. Do you guys know the ones I mean?
I thought it was an attempt to make one of those. I didn't read satire.
There was far too little romance to be a Hallmark movie.
I just felt like it was a sincere attempt at doing something. I mean, it's a comedy, but it's still they're trying to do something sincere with it.
I think they were just trying to make like a PG holiday flick with a couple of slightly adult jokes that the parents would get. I think was kind of what they were trying to achieve.
I wasn't sure if it was supposed to be a comedy or a dark comedy.
Yeah, because I guess
a little bit is a little dark. Because the sense of humor is a little weird.
Because here's the challenge I had: like Michael Shannon and Judy Greer feel like they are actually just sort of making a Hallmark Channel like holiday movie.
Yeah.
But the Tom Lennon, Ian McShane, like Ron Perlman stuff is like this feels like a hard dark comedy satire, and the two movies kind of like pass in the night almost. Like, do you know what I mean? Like,
they just happen to take place in the same town and they walk by each other.
And it's very strange because I really could not reconcile that like in my head with like, what was the goal? I don't know. Like that Tom Lennon and Ian McShane stuff seems so far tonally different from the Michael Shannon, Judy Greer stuff.
Ian McShane's character on its own seems like he should not be living in Pottersville.
By the way,
I didn't know any of these actors were in the movie really, except for Michael Shannon and Ron Perlman.
You mean the movie poster didn't look like?
Well, I didn't look at the poster. I just literally I looked it up on Netflix and I said I took a brief glimpse of the poster and I said looks corny and I kind of hit play.
Well, I was thinking this morning. It's funny because like every person in this movie, like the main people, are faces I recognize and names. You know, they're like not huge names, but you know, names.
Yeah.
And even some of like the background people I recognize too. So it's like they really got a pretty good cast for this. And I think if it was, I mean, we'll get into the movie. We haven't talked about the movie yet, but if it was like a cast of nobodies, I might have liked it better. But being a cast of like people I recognize,
yeah, like if it were like an indie flick, a smaller indie flick,
Except nobody, none of them seemed like they were phoning it in. I mean,
they were playing them with genuine care for their job and their craft.
But that almost like, you're right, and that almost like heightened it. Because I'm like, well, Michael Shannon seems to be actually giving his all to this Hallmark movie, Christmas movie. And like Tom Lennon and Ian McShane are going all in on this like dark comedy satire. And I'm like, were they working, like was the director talking with all of them about the same movie? Or like... because you're right. This is nothing about this movie feels lazy.
Not at all.
The production quality was far better than what I was expecting.
Although weirdly shifting, because I kept thinking in the beginning, there's a couple of opening shots where I was like,
like somewhat low budget.
Then I don't know if I was just getting more used to it, or I think it was actually like some of it was getting better.
I wonder if the first shots were shot last and then just did a smaller scale.
I think
like those opening shots where he goes to the store and he shovels the walkway, right?
Yes.
It looked very good, but low budget. It was one. It was like one smaller grade camera. It was probably like a two-person crew. Let's get Michael Shannon and an audio guy and a camera guy, and let's just drive.
Do you know what it looked like?
I wonder if that was, yeah.
Well, that might have been. It also looked like, to me, it reminded me of like Hercules in the sense of that shot looked like it was shot at like 11 in the morning. Like so many of the other exteriors in this movie are wisely done either at night or very early morning, so you get that, or late afternoon, so you're getting that lighting. Strong lighting.
Or also, you can utilize the Christmas lights with the old architecture. Sure.
You can do that. But that one was like, nope, that looks like it was just like 11 a.m. and they were like, you know, like sun overhead. Like it just, something about it was
I wonder if that was the last shot because they needed the front of the store to be covered with snow. So they just maybe. Wait, or maybe the first shot. Let's get up there and clean it out quick.
Maybe, yeah,
one
maybe.
Or the other. I wonder. Yeah. I wasn't bothered by it, but you're right. It does. Looking back, it does seem to be a slightly lower budget quality to like the first 5 minutes of the movie.
Because it's
and
also,
then it kind of okay. Now we're getting multiple camera setups, and so now we're getting better lighting. And
because they definitely shot digitally. Like there's no like
oh,
just
sure.
looking at this, there's no way this was shot on film.
No.
And that kind of freaked me out in the beginning, and then I was like, oh okay, like
but
somehow it came
bad,
together.
Though. It didn't look bad though.
So the movie kind of starts with, like, General Zod's general store. You know, Michael Shannon, you know, going into his little general store, and he's, like, cleaning the sidewalk. And
well, they go out of their way to show that he's, like, a really nice guy. Like, he shovels the whole thing. There's this... And then he just stops and he looks, and the whole block hasn't been shoveled yet. And then he kind of sighs.
Well, no, the whole block is not shoveled because every other store is closed.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
No, I thought he was shoveling it to show that he was
no,
a nice guy. Because he does shovel the whole block.
Well, yeah, he shows he's a nice guy, but also shows that the rest of the stores are closed. Because it was all the for sale signs in all the windows that weren't shoveled.
And he's got this, like, interior to his shop that's, like, super, like, could not be more quaint. You know, like, give us the quaintest general store you can.
Mm-hmm. But also restaurant. Kind of like there were tables.
Yeah. It could have been something kind of like, well, it's like this place where I just got my coffee advertisement is like that, where it's sort of like a general store / gift shop / restaurant, like cafe.
I guess they were, but I had a lot of questions about the food thing too, because that's sort of like thrown out there, like people are eating, but you're like, where is this food coming from? Like that never is, like there only seems to be Michael Shannon and sometimes Judy Greer there. I was like, where is this magic food coming
from? Maybe they're eating the Bigfoot long hot dogs and then just bringing them inside.
I joked, by the way, that I laughed at more than I should have.
I didn't catch that one.
Yeah, I cut. And then, so the movie's like, okay, like, and it just seems like it's got this kind of weird, like, slow-moving, like, again, like, kind of Hallmark Christmas movie
That's
vibe.
What I was expecting. I was like, well, this is very corny. This is going to be, like, super corny.
Yeah.
Still corny, and Ian McShane comes in selling raw meat, you know.
Well, we also have to call attention to, he allows a woman to put her bill on a tab.
Right.
Because it's Christmas time, and she doesn't have the cash. So he says, oh, it's fine, you can pay me back later.
Right.
That comes back.
And I do, one of the knocks I'm going to make on this movie is, like, this movie is in a pretty impressive cast, and it doesn't look bad, but, like, its music and its sound design is very problematic.
Yeah.
Like, there's big chunks of this movie where there's no music, like, not even just, like, you know, just, hey, we're kind of going to have a little, like, connective tissue kind of music going here. Just, like, nothing.
No.
And there's, like, no sound design. There's parts of this movie that literally are just, like, just the actors, the mic'd actor is the only audio we're hearing, which,
right.
I mean, given the cast you have, like, that seemed like a strange thing. If you watch it, listen for what's not there, I guess.
They spent the money they could have used on sound design on the cast.
Yeah.
Well, the there was a scene, and I actually remember saying it out loud. I watched it this morning, and I said, well, why is the music playing now? And then the scene changed, the tone of the music. The scene was the same, but the content of the scene sort of changed a little bit.
Right.
And then the music changed. And I said, well, they should have had it silent up until that point and then brought the music in. I actually remember saying that out loud. I was like, what's with this stupid music? That's where you should have brought the music in. And I remember saying it out loud.
Yeah.
It was like kind of this wah, 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 wah music. And then it kind of, the scene turned touching. And then the touching guitar started playing. And I was like, why not just leave that and delete the first part, have the first part be silent, and then it gets a little nicer, you know, with the music. but it seemed very like in your face, kind of Mickey Mousing of the music.
Well, there's something I even wondered if like they lost some of their budget in post production or something. Like if someone was cutting their budget in post because it was just like it was really jarring. And I don't know that I've ever made that complaint about a movie ever before that the sound design was lacking, but this is the one.
Free Jack, maybe.
Maybe Free. Yeah, that's true. That movie did have a lot of. That movie, also a movie with a lot of post production issues. So, and then and Michael Shannon buys some raw meat from Ian McShane. He's like, I'm gonna go elk home steaks. And surprise my wife with elk steaks.
At this point, I was saying, has ever in the history of movies, a character gone home early and not found his wife cheating on him?
Yeah, I thought of that too. Yeah, like there's that 100%.
Whenever a character says, "Hey, I'm gonna go home early, surprise my wife," 100% of the time.
She's having
something
an affair.
Weird, yeah.
And it is weird because he walks in and his like this movie has kind of been ridiculed as being like the furry movie because his wife and Ron Perlman's characters are furries. They wear those giant animal costumes and are
doing creepy things, yeah.
Yeah, being
not
weird.
Judging,
except,
just saying.
Yeah.
Well, they also made a point to say that they were not having sex.
It's not what it's about, Christy.
Yeah,
not about that.
It's not
this scene, like, and I can't believe I'm knocking on it. Cut to about 5 minutes from now when I'm like praising this movie, but like this scene is where I think they probably lost some viewers because it just something on the vibe of this scene didn't work.
It's
jokes
like it's
that don't land.
Movie. Yeah,
yeah.
And the tone is established that this is going to be a charming and touching, corny like PG movie, and then he comes home. And he thinks his wife's going to surprise him with a pet dog. He kicks the door down, and they're wearing, like, these mascot outfits. And then that startles you right away. Now, it's supposed to, but I think it does it in a bad way where it takes you out of the movie. You're like, whoa, wait a minute. His wife is cheating on him with a dude, and they, like, dressed up in, like, mascot costumes. And what kind of movie is this?
This is where I went, okay, it is a weird movie.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
I think if it was just this scene and it was just, like, one joke, like, oh, they're dressed up as these animals or whatever, then it's... You know, maybe it would have worked better, but to continue to bring it back the entire movie, like this furry thing and furry parties, and it was like, it's really pushing this furry agenda.
But without this scene.
Well, there's no reason for him. Yeah.
He would never have dressed up as Bigfoot.
The motivation for the character is this. Which is
but
kind
to
of
keep bringing it back.
Then leads to the moment with his wife later on.
Right. It just felt like a running joke that wasn't funny.
You could have just brought her back at the end.
And you know what hurts this scene, too? And, like, there's no disputing that Michael Shannon, a guy who's been on this podcast more times than he probably should, but there's no disputing that he's a great actor, but...
He's good in that, yeah.
And he's good in the movie.
He's good, but I would question if this movie wanted to be a comedy, I don't know if Michael Shannon was the way to go. Because, like... I think even this scene where he walks in with, like, it's like a comedic scene that's not featuring comedic actors.
You would imagine, like, Jason Bateman in this part instead.
Yes, could have made it very funny. And, like, I like Christina Hendricks a lot, but I don't know that I would define her as a comedic actress. And there's some issues there. And Ron Perlman, who can be funny, actually is the one guy who seems to be kind of trying to deliver... But, like, it's three very talented people, two of whom are not comedians,
trying to do a comedy scene. Michael Shannon's reactions were more heartbreaking than funny.
Yeah.
Like, I was really sad for him.
Yeah, he's in, like, a straight-up drama movie.
Yeah.
And, like, and maybe that's where, like, this movie mystified me, is, like, what is it going for? Is it trying to, like, just toy with its audience to the point of, like, I couldn't figure that out. But it's really weird. And then Michael Shannon goes and gets drunk. We get this really weird scene with him and Judy Greer, which, by the way, 100% is written as a comedy scene, but is not performed as a comedy
performed
scene.
Performed as a drama.
Except for Judy Greer, who is funny, so it's a 50% comedy scene.
Except I disagree. I think Michael Shannon was a really good drunk actor.
Yeah.
And he came off, I thought he came off as funny in that scene.
Did you? Okay. I could see the jokes on the page. Judy Greer was making me laugh.
Yeah.
But, like, Michael Shannon wasn't.
I was impressed, because sometimes when an actor is acting drunk, it's...
Yeah.
But I thought he was really good at acting drunk.
Right. And then we kind of now get to... one of the funny things with this movie is the plot could be summed up. They could have done this as a 20-minute episode of a sitcom. Like, the plot is so, like... It really is almost like a sitcom script expanded to 90 minutes.
Yeah.
That he is, like, weird because he's realizing his wife is into the furry movement. So he has an old Halloween costume. And he's like, oh, I'm going to... put on the Halloween costume.
Well, it was a combination of like the hunting camouflage.
Yeah.
Because the body of it was the hunting like weed
ghillie suit. Oh, you're right. It's a ghillie suit.
And then he found the, I didn't know those things had a name. I just learned something new. Yeah. And then he found like an old gorilla mask in what I assumed was the store's Halloween decorations.
It was a box that said like Halloween on it or something. Yeah. And he's... And the movie does something mildly clever here of, like, then you see him go out the door, and then it cuts to the next day of, like, we don't, you know, they essentially show us in flashback that he was, you know, seen by the whole town.
Stumbling around the town.
And people think that he was some kind of a Bigfoot.
Drinking out of a urinating statue fountain.
Yeah.
I'll be honest with you, that was probably the first good laugh I got in this movie, and when this movie started to win me over was at that point. That was a fun... I think that was... That guy, who I have to think was like a local actor or something, delivers it pretty funny when he talks about it. Yeah. He's very, like... You know what? Get ready for an hour of me defending this movie.
All right.
Yeah. And the scene that Jack may have seen, the local news is reporting on this, and Judy Greer's like, you got to see this news report. There was a Bigfoot running around town.
They call him Squatch.
Yeah. And Michael Shannon starts having flashbacks, remembering.
Oh, wait, I did drink from that.
Oh, crap, it's me. He begins to realize they just saw me. So he goes to the police station to
It becomes a weird thing where it's like, almost like he'd stolen money or murdered somebody, like where he's like guilty. Feels as guilty. He's like hiding stuff in the bag and he's gonna go to the
because
police
he's
to
such a nice
confess.
Guy.
Yeah,
instead
of being like, oh no, guys, I just got drunk last night. Sorry, it was...
Yeah, but yeah, he's like, he's super weird, but he goes to the police station to talk to Ron Perlman,
who kept saying in the last scene that it was a big deal in town, and now we find out he's the sheriff,
right. And he's the sheriff, and Ron Perlman thinks that Michael Shannon wants to talk about this furry thing, and Michael Shannon's clearly wants to explain to Ron Perlman, no, that was this whole thing that has become a phenomenon was me, and Ron Perlman is too busy, in a mildly funny moment, too busy taking, like, phone calls from, like, I guess Hollywood, like, execs or something, I don't know, like, Inside Edition or something, they say or something, like, some TV producers are on the phone with him, and so... Michael Shannon just kind of is like weirdly, like, you know, shambles out the door, and then our story is in motion, you know, basically. And you know what? And this bugged me for so long. The guy in the town
one of them I recognize, but I don't know.
Credit card ads. He's a guy who does... I can't remember what the credit card is, but he's like the guy one of the credit card companies.
Yeah, because I recognize him.
It took me so long to put that together. Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
I kept trying to find out or figure out who Thomas Lennon's producer was.
I feel like I've seen her somewhere. Yeah. And
they're all recognizable faces.
Yeah. And I got to look that up, too, because she looked familiar to me.
She's not in the cast list on IMDb.
Really?
She did look, yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
And she has a lot of lines.
Yeah.
That's an injustice. And she was funny, too. I liked her in this. That's harsh.
I was surprised at that, too, because Stacey Gutierrez, the reporter, is in there. But the producer is not. Unless I just completely missed it, because I also don't think I ever caught her name. The character's name.
I don't remember.
I don't know if they ever gave her a name.
I don't know if they ever said one. Yeah.
Yeah. Because that's where, for me, that's where this movie, like, this is the section of the movie I straight up loved. I thought Thomas Lennon was hilarious.
Oh, yeah.
Like,
I've always liked
him.
He was great.
His character came in, I was like, oh, this is fun. Like,
yeah.
everything he did just made me laugh. Like, there was... like,
well, because I felt like his stuff was probably mostly improv because it was, like, so much better than any of the other dialogue or, you know what I mean?
It could be. Well, Ian McShane was... the scenes where this movie actually worked well together. Apex.
He works with Ian McShane very well.
Yeah.
And you get the Jaws thing where the grizzly hunter, when this case, he's not so much a learned expert, he pretends to be, and the sheriff kind of go out on the mission to get the Sasquatch. It's Jaws. They even reference it with the claws on the
claws ones. Yeah.
I did not realize this, but my husband was sitting next to me as I was watching, and he starts laughing, and I'm like, what?
That's Jaws.
Why? He's like, this is the speech. Yeah. Like, he said it was like the exact same
the
speech.
Beginning of it was, yeah.
The beginning was, yeah.
And the best
have you
part
never seen
was,
Jaws?
I've seen it, but only once.
It's awesome how Ian McShane even kind of puts a spin on it where instead of like Quint, who essentially builds up to the speech, Ian McShane is kind of like trailing down and by the end is like, I'll just go. You know what I mean? Like, it's really...
Yeah.
And like, Thomas Lennon, we should say, he's doing an Australian accent.
He's playing like a Bear Grylls type who's like all hyped up. He's this TV hero who hunts big game. But you later find out he's a fake. Like, he's never... really face danger. He's faking the Australian accent because he thinks it makes him seem cooler. So he's kind of out of his depth. And he has like meltdowns and yells at his crew.
I wanted to see like clips of his show.
That would have been a really good idea.
Even during the ending credits, just like put in a square box like they do sometimes, shots of the show for that episode. Like, how are we going to edit this episode together? And then that's sort of like the joke is the episode is playing as the credits roll.
I want to see other episodes because one thing I didn't quite get about his character was, like, did he believe some of his past episodes? Because he's, you know, he himself is a fake, but he seemed to actually believe that he was looking for Bigfoot. Like, he clearly knew he was making stuff up, but like, what did he do in all of his other episodes?
I wonder if he believes the creatures are real, never found them yet. And he's like willing to fake it to prove it.
I took it as it was all faked.
Yeah, that's
I took it as it was just all faked.
But
and then he was just like, good.
His indignation in the end. Like, okay, so what did he find in his previous episodes? Like, was there somebody that was really... Did he find the Loch Ness Monster? I mean...
I feel like they were doing that like Ghost Hunters thing of like where they set the bar really low and they're like... You know, if we hear a twig break, that means there's... You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I felt like he was, like, doing some of those things to build up
and
to it.
My legit, like, favorite moment in this movie was from him. And I think it's because I work in the promotions department at a news station.
I know exactly.
When he's shooting the promo and he keeps, like, redoing it. Like, that one didn't feel good. And he's like, let me do it with the glasses.
I laughed at that.
That was, like... Because that's so real. It's like...
It's so... I legit laughed out loud
at that. It was so funny.
It hit home.
Yeah.
It was so great. In fact, it would have been even funnier if they didn't put the music in. Like, they put in stinger music.
There's a lot of ba-ba-da-da-da-da music here. This could have worked really well if it were just quiet.
Yeah, that's funny.
And just every time you would hear, like, Thomas Lennon say something like, there's definitely a scorch in these
woods. There's definitely a scorch in these woods.
I mean, what, like, just a ray of sunshine he was
cool.
in this whole movie.
I know what a coyote sounds like.
It's just great.
I apologize if there we have any listeners from down under for offending your language.
But I think the accent was supposed to be bad.
But I don't have to keep doing this, though. I'm apologizing on my behalf.
The quote I thought someone was going to say was, come out for sap.
Come out for some sap. That's great.
If I learned Thomas Lennon did improv all of this, I mean, the song he sings
was great.
Yeah.
There's about 12 more verses, but you know.
Oh my god, yeah, the song is the best. I might watch this again. I mean, I'll give my full recommendation.
I should watch it again, but his scenes were quite funny.
Oh, and there's also in this, because the movie has a weird structure. The front end is very Michael Shannon heavy, and like the back end of the movie is where Michael Shannon heavy, and like in
the middle chapter is the
it's just a lot of him like looking mopey.
I kind of forgot he was part of the movie.
Yeah, kind of.
You know, and you forget it's a Christmas movie, but the end of the movie is very powerful for a Christmas movie.
And
that was something that I didn't expect. That surprised me. I was like, oh, well, that's really touching. I like that a lot. Yeah. That's really cool. I mean, it's kind of cliche that town helps him out, but, you know, at the same time, it's really good. Where the rest of the movie is just, it could be, you know, March 17th, you know, it could be,
yeah.
Right.
Right? It doesn't
right.
matter.
Right.
But it's It'll just snowy
Saint
time.
Patrick's
it would
Day
be a
movie.
St. Patrick's Day movie. But yeah, it's, you know.
Do they make those?
Yeah. They should.
This
would have made it different. You know, it's maybe he got drunk on St. Patrick's Day and he was wearing a costume. He was dared to do it, right? And he could do the exact same movie. You forget it's a Christmas movie until the end of the film, and the beginning of the film reminds you, well, going in, you know it's a Christmas movie. And that was one of my complaints, is it's the story is about Maynard, the Maynard character, and how he's just this guy who's just so nice, but then he's trying to, in essence, live his life, which is what Ian Shane tells him to do, you know what I mean? And he's like, all right, fine, I'm gonna get drunk and dress like a furry if that's what my wife wants. And he's inadvertently blamed as being Bigfoot. He maybe thinks it's funny and he likes all the tourism that it's generating for the town, so he kind of gets trapped before he realizes it. But this is only explained in a line of dialogue near the end of the movie.
No,
instead of showing it. I would have shown
it. They absolutely showed it.
But they needed to show it more.
So after the first night, after Thomas Lennon shows up, you see him looking around at everybody smiling and getting along and everybody's happy. Mm-hmm. And he kind of looks around and nods. And that's the moment where he's like, all right, this is how I make my town happy.
Right.
And that's why he kept doing it.
Yeah.
I'd like to have seen more of him doing it other than them trying to find the Bigfoot.
I don't
or him almost getting caught.
I don't
that
disagree
be,
with that.
That would be funny, too. Like, oh, my God, like, maybe he gets caught or some kid sees him and he's like, you know, go away kind of thing.
Yeah.
Like, he sucks at being Bigfoot and then he, you know what I mean? Like,
well, it's also trying to do the whole thing. Like, there's a weird scene with him and Judy Greer where she's kind of hitting on him and he's kind of blowing her off. Because
so he can be Bigfoot.
You know, so he can be Bigfoot. But, like, it is a scene...
Well,
that is a straight up drama scene.
Yeah,
know?
I think because she at that point you're talking about, she knows he's Bigfoot.
Well, he sends her to the back room to get something, and
she's
trying,
finds
the bag. Yep.
Yeah, so she's trying to like kind of because she knows that they're gonna be out hunting Bigfoot that night. So she's
trying.
I don't know if she's making sure, if she's just trying to get him to not do it, but she's like, "Hey, are you doing anything tonight?" Cause she knows that he's gonna be. So she's like trying to trap him in that or something.
To like save his, to prevent him from getting hurt by the hunters.
Yeah.
But it feels like she's also kind of like
she feels sorry for
him. And like
maybe she feels sorry for him too. Like, wow, his life has gotten so bad. He dresses like Bigfoot. I'm going to try to.
No, I think she was flirting with him and just wanting him to not go out there, I think.
I took from it that she is seeing that he's doing it because it's beneficial for the town.
So she's not creeped out because she knows it's coming from a good place. Yeah.
Like, I think she actually is. But it's like weird because it's done in almost like a hard drama style.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And also like I start having notes at this point. I'm like, was Christina Hendricks on set for like 45 minutes? Like, there's so little of her in the movie.
Yeah.
And she like
her
goes.
Her face is in like four shots.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, I feel like they had her on set for a day and they just like ran her from set to set and like just took
insert
like,
shots. Yeah.
Yeah. There's no way it was. Well, we'll jump ahead. When they actually have the furry party scene in the woods, I was like, there's no way that's actually Christina Hendricks in the suit in most of those shots.
She doesn't take it off.
That's
definitely
the
post,
one where it comes off. I'm like, that's definitely an insert shot that they got.
Well, it's possible they were trying to work around her schedule. Well, I don't know.
Maybe. I mean, you know, she is. I mean, considering she's a small part in a small movie, I was like, wow, you got Christina Hendricks for a small part in your small movie. That's all right. And where do things go from here? Is this where? At this point, actually, I was legitimately enjoying so much of the Thomas Lennon stuff enough that I stopped taking good notes. But like somewhere in here, I know his producer, Thomas Lennon's producer. Basically, is like, yeah, we need to hire Ian McShane to actually catch this.
She knows he's a sham, and this will be huge. If he can catch the Bigfoot,
right?
You can take the credit, and we could make millions.
And we'll make millions. And Thomas Lennon...
We reveal in this scene that he actually is an Australian, and he's speaking in an American accent.
Right.
Which I thought was funny, because you can see through the cracks, like he's just, it's kind of a cliched character, but nonetheless, it works in this movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Where he's this, I'm a sham, these people are going to find out I'm a sham, don't worry about it. Ian McShane is the real deal. He's going to catch the Bigfoot, which they all believe in this movie. So let's use him to get to, but then the deal with the devil is, you know, we're going to go out alone, and we're going to bivouac in the woods, and we're going to do all the things that he pretends to do on TV, but has never actually done, and that I liked a lot. Like, this guy is like a useless like city slicker who's never been in the woods before in his life. And now he's, what do you mean I got to sleep in a tent?
Yes.
I got a yoga injury. Do you want to pick up the bag there? I got a yoga injury, you know? It's like, you can,
and the
he's
Jaws,
horrified by this idea.
Right. Well, and the Jaws references continue because it turns into it's the
Hooper Quint, Brody yep,
yeah,
dynamic.
Going
yep.
out, you right, know? Yeah. You know, and they're going out in the woods, and like, you can just tell that Ian McShane's character like knows exact what
he could see through.
He's
yeah.
seeing
yeah.
through everything.
And he's like, he's screwing
here.
With him. Yeah,
and
which,
just
I, which
like,
I thought they worked well together.
Yeah,
that was where I thought the movie yeah. worked the strongest was when they were kind of off each other.
Yes, yeah, I almost feel like this, and maybe they realized this while they were shooting it, that the Thomas Lennon, like Ian McShane, like Ron
good Cohen, chemistry,
like,
yeah.
that was kind of the heart of their movie, and maybe they were trying to retrofit that.
Maybe.
Like, and I don't know. It's, but it's just funny. The they're all out there. They're in these crazy adventures. Like Thomas Lennon has his little like GoPro,
yep.
you know, selfie stick thing. Doing all that kind of like ghost hunter stuff, but mm-hmm. doing it really, like really funny.
Yeah.
Like, you know, he's satirizing something that's actually been heavily satirized, but like doing it great.
Mm-hmm.
And then I don't know. The next note I have is when they actually come across the furry party in the woods.
Yeah, that comes a little later. Or is it here? I can't remember. It's somewhere when they're in
but
the woods.
At some
yeah.
point, they do a little cutting back and forth.
Right. Yeah. But, and they start seeing these lights in the woods, and then Ian McShane's character is like, "What? We're going over there."
At this point, the Michael Shannon character is dressed up like Bigfoot, and he's gonna like sneak
yeah,
up and scare them. But they're attracted
on, yeah.
to the furry party, so it's like
yeah.
he almost makes his big.
Correct.
Yeah.
Correct.
I'll get on camera as Bigfoot, and that'll really get people coming here for tourism. So he comes to roar, but they're already gone.
Right.
And they're
right.
at the furry
but,
party.
Like Alex was just saying, though. Ian McShane's like, we have to check this out, and Ron Perlman's like, no, we don't have to go over there, guys. No, just forget that. No.
He says, Ron Perlman has a great line in here that's something so funny where he's like, we shouldn't go over there. There's already people over there. And like even Thomas Lennon's like, hey, that makes no sense.
Yeah.
It's really, that's just a good bit of,
right.
like, that's actually where, like, there was a part of me that wondered if it was just Thomas Lennon's improv, because this part of the movie actually sort of has, like, good comedic, like,
yeah.
structure and beats mm-hmm. to it, you know?
Yeah.
And they go over there, and I'm like, it's probably the only time you're going to see mainstream actors in a furry dance party
yeah.
scene. I would love to know what the furry community's like reaction to this movie is going to be.
I think it was poking fun at it, but not in a way that was like distasteful. Or,
I would
like,
agree
insulting.
With you. I bet they were probably like thrilled.
Like, I mean, I think Thomas Lennon just called them like freaks later on, but
oh, that's
oh, but,
true.
But then Thomas
but
Lennon
the,
by the
sort
end
the,
is like
he's sort of the
oh,
bad
into
guy
it
of the movie.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
he's angry and calls them freaks. But
yeah, and Ian McShane is legitimately like,
creeped
okay,
out.
Shut
yeah.
it down.
Yeah.
Like, you all need to leave.
Yeah.
And so, okay, so then they're continuing and...
Well, basically what happens, so it kind of goes back and forth, like you said, between them in the woods and what's going on in town with Michael Shannon. And at one point he overhears the producer in the store say that Thomas Lennon he's going to be out there for one more night, and if they didn't find anything, they were leaving.
That's right.
And they basically wouldn't have a show. So then Pottersville wouldn't be famous, there wouldn't be a show or whatever. So then Michael Shannon decides... But it's like weird. He writes like a suicide note or something. But
yeah.
he decides to go out like that night to give him the evidence or whatever. So it keeps it going.
Well, because he thinks he's going to get stuffed and hung on the wall.
Yeah. It was like a weird dramatic. Like he's
just like
yeah.
ridiculous because, yeah. He's,
but
yeah.
then we never,
yeah,
we never know what he wrote.
Yeah, because Judy Greer finds it and she reads it. But there's never any like voiceover or anything saying what the note says. You
yeah.
don't know if it's like just him admitting he's Bigfoot because she's crying.
I think he assumed that he admitted he was Bigfoot and he was going to expose himself for being the fake Bigfoot.
But she's like crying as she's reading it. I don't know if it's just because it was touching that he was, or if he's like, I'm going to go out and get myself shot.
Maybe he
like
revealed his feelings to her.
And maybe it's also unnecessary because we know as the audience that the Judy Greer character
already knows
this.
Yeah.
And we also assume that how far is he going to get if he gets captured as Bigfoot? All they got to do is say, hey, this is just a jackass in a rubber suit.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's not like she runs out to the woods to find him and stop him before he gets shot or something. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that scene is really unnecessary.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I almost would have liked to see, kind of rewriting the movie a lot. If the town finds out and they say, well, how are we going to get Pottersville on the map, and then do like a Spartacus thing where like everyone kind of dresses up like Bigfoot and there's multiple Bigfoot sightings.
I would have gone for that.
That would have been cool.
I would have gone for that.
Like, oh, let's stick up for our friend. He was faking it because the town, but there really is a Bigfoot. Oh my God, how? And then oh my God, there's like one over there. That could have worked.
Well, the movie also didn't do the thing I thought it was going to do. What it was going to do was that Ian McShane was going to, like, when Ian McShane ends up tranquilizing Michael Shannon Maynard.
Right.
And I thought what the movie was going to do is Ian McShane was going to go, oh my God, oh, and like light was going to dine on, you know, shine on Ian McShane's head.
Fault.
And he was going to be like, oh God. And then he was going to actually help further. You know,
well,
he was going to buy
that could have been good too.
What I got about was when he saw Bigfoot before he shoots him, he realizes then that it's just a guy in a suit.
Right.
And then he shoots him because he's like, okay, I'm just going to bring him back to town so that this ends, because he's kind of
I think he wants to expose.
Yeah. I don't know if he knows that it's Michael Shannon. I don't think he knows that, but he knows that it's just a guy in a suit, because he kind of has that look like, oh, okay. And then he's like, sorry.
Right.
And he shoots him and tranks him or whatever. So I think he was just wanting to put an end to it because he's like over it.
I guess, yeah, I guess that's what they're saying. Yeah. It would have been kind of interesting if like Ian McShane's character had then like agreed to help further the, I don't know, maybe that's, because the ending of this, again, I loved this movie, or loved is harsh. I really liked this movie. Yeah, I didn't love it. I loved the Thomas Lennon middle section of this movie. But the ending is a little clunky and lumpy.
Well, because then it goes back to the Hallmark movie.
Yeah.
Then all of a sudden Thomas Lennon's like a bad guy.
Well, yeah, so they catch...
Right.
You ruined my show and...
So they catch Michael Shannon, they bring him back to town in the back of the pickup truck. They still think it's Bigfoot, and they, like, unveil him in front of the whole town. And they all...
Which, by the way, did you notice there are people in furry costumes?
Yeah.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Yeah.
Because they're all excited about it.
Yeah.
And so... So then Judy Greer runs up, because they still think it's obviously a guy in a gorilla mask, but they still are like, oh, it's Bigfoot. And Judy Greer runs up, is that Bigfoot? It's Maynard. And she takes the mask off, and they're like, oh, my God.
And then everybody hates him all of a sudden.
Yeah, and then Tom Lennon, like, loses his mind. He's like, you guys are frauds. You're making me look like an idiot. I'm going to sue you all. And, you know.
Now everybody hates him because of the lawsuit.
Yes. By the way, another hilarious Thomas Lennon line when the reporter's like, are you going to sue the town? And Thomas Lennon's like, well, it's confidential. I can't say anything. But, I mean, I can confirm that. And I'm definitely. He's so great in this. And it gets real emotional here, too.
Well, it turns into the Hallmark Christmas movie, which does this very effectively.
Well,
but
it's weird
in this movie.
The whole town, like, turns on Maynard. They're like, oh, we're going to get sued now. Christmas is ruined.
But
we're
I
not
going
to be famous.
I did, like, there was the moment, you know, when he's sitting in the back of the truck and everybody takes their, like, their one shot and the one-liners that they all give. I thought that was still... You know, that was still the comedy. And then it goes into the packing up the Bigfoot merchandise and all that kind of stuff. But the I'm going to put my Bigfoot...
Yeah.
Yeah, that one, that was hilarious.
I actually have a note in the next scene. I go, oh, the comedy is over.
Yeah.
Like, because we then go into this, like, I'm like, okay, well, the stuff that was funny has...
Yeah, it's basically the end of the comedy right there. The rest of the movie is just, like, heartfelt.
Yeah, like a heartwarming drama.
Yeah,
romantic drama.
Yeah. So they all turn on him, and then Judy Greer like organizes this meeting where she convinces them all that he just did it for the good of the town and he cares about the town and blah blah blah. And at the same time, he's doing a TV interview where he's saying I did it for the good of the town and blah blah blah.
Yeah.
So then
was like, the TV interview? I thought the TV interview piece was weird. That was sort of like doubling up on it. Because I'm like, well,
we didn't need it. Yeah.
I don't know if we needed it.
Because at this point, now they're done. They'd be like, oh, story's over, right?
I think it was just for maybe for his wife to see it. Because his wife wasn't at the town meeting. But
maybe that is. Yes. I think you're probably right. Because then Christina Hendricks re-enters the movie. And she's all into him because he was on TV.
Right. Yeah.
Okay. Because the excitement.
Oh, no, yeah,
the
yeah.
excitement
yep.
of it.
Makes sense.
Yeah. So, well, Judy Greer reveals to the town that his book where he keeps all their tabs in is empty. He never wrote anything down.
Yeah.
So they all go to his shop and start paying their tabs.
I liked that a lot for like a dramatic...
That tugged
at my heartstrings
this
a lot,
was
which I
one...
don't normally would admit. Like, I thought that was really, really good. I was like, where are they going with this? And then she says, look, the book's empty, right? And I thought, wow, that's a really good... That would have worked. It was just odd to have it in a movie that was mostly a comedy about hunting Bigfoot.
Right.
Yeah.
So, like, if this were, like, a Hallmark Channel movie, I might actually, like, not that I'm one who normally goes in for that, but that's very effective. Like, that's good. Like, if somebody gave that to me in a script, I was like, holy crap, that's really good. That's gold, right? Christmas gold.
Yeah.
And this is where it becomes... It's a Wonderful Life.
Yeah.
Right.
With, you know, the visual of everyone one by one putting down their money.
So,
and, you know, that, so at that point,
everyone
I'm like,
does appreciate
okay,
it.
Now it finally is It's a Wonderful Life. So I wonder if this was like, if it started out as one movie and then
they wanted
kind
to
of
see,
like combined it with
they wanted
movie.
To see a movie that took It's a Wonderful Life and Jaws and put Bigfoot in it.
I don't. There's like, do you remember a couple of years ago when like Will Ferrell and who was an actress made a, like essentially a Hallmark Christmas movie, but did it like straight faced? Like,
oh,
did
it, yeah. It wasn't Kristen Wiig, was it?
Kristen Wiig. It's Will Ferrell and Kristen Wiig did.
It was like a Hallmark movie. It wasn't like literally
like,
a Hallmark
it was literally
movie.
Like a Hallmark movie. Yeah. And there's a part of me that almost wonders if that was. I think like maybe the script was being tugged in different directions of like, what if we make a straightforward Hallmark movie but put in these like weird dark comedy concepts, but then somebody else was like, no, let's punch it up and actually have jokes in it, or like and it just that this
but,
became sort of like a hybrid of like
but
three
the,
different
the
versions.
Tone never shifted. I always complain about tonal shifts. The tonal shifts weren't that bad though, because the comedy, with the except the furry stuff, is dealt with but not in an R-rated way. It's very PG. And it fit it seemed to have a little more balance than it being like fart jokes, corny, glowy Christmas stuff. It really was a little bit, there was more balance to it.
Well,
there was, there are shifts, but they it
well,
was
but
not
the,
as obnoxious.
There's really just two shifts. There's the shift after like the first 15, 20 minutes and the shift before like the final 15.
Mm-hmm.
But like those shifts are abrupt. Like those shifts are whiplash inducing, you know, when you go from like a heartfelt drama into a crazy comedy, then back out of a crazy comedy into a heartfelt drama. You know, yeah, it's just an odd thing.
We should say the movie wraps up. We didn't wrap the movie up yet.
Oh,
it wraps up with him leaving his wife finally.
Right.
Because he realizes she just wants to be with him because he was on TV.
Right.
And she needs the excitement in her life. So he's like, well, I'm just boring, so.
Well, he even does it in a very nice guy way. He's like, hey, go do your furry thing.
Right.
Everyone deserves to be happy.
I want you to be happy.
Yeah.
And then he gets with Judy Greer and they open up a Bigfoot museum. And that's the end of the movie.
Yeah.
So at the very end of the movie, I had closed captions on. And so they kiss at the end of the movie, very Hallmark movie moment. And then closed caption said cheering. But
it's not.
It was a Bigfoot
it's
sound.
It's a Bigfoot roar. The final
like
frame is they kiss, and then all of a sudden there's a Bigfoot roar, and they're like, what the hell?
Yeah,
and they like
yeah,
look to the left, like there's a real Bigfoot.
Yeah.
Which would be interesting if they had planted that idea earlier in the film. Like maybe he's out in the woods pretending to be Bigfoot, then he sees something out of the corner of his eye, and then like gets scared, and then...
You know what? That's actually an interesting idea that they
like maybe
could have
Bigfoot
also
is
gone
real.
With. Yeah,
yeah,
like if he was playing Bigfoot, but there was actually the possibility of a real Bigfoot.
But you don't explicitly state it, but if there were only even just one scene earlier on, like he's hiding in Bigfoot, maybe he like steps in, because they talked about scat earlier, maybe he steps in like animal poop, and he's like, oh, God. And he's cold, maybe he trips and like lands, and it's like, oh, and then somebody sees him and says, oh, look, it's Bigfoot. And then he like gets up and he sees something out of the corner of his eye, and then he's a little freaked out. And then at the end of the movie, there's this roar. It may have been funnier.
Yeah. Yeah.
Jack wanted more poop in this movie.
That's yeah. Right. This movie needed...
That's one thing every movie needs more of.
Yeah.
Poop.
Yeah. I guess I didn't do a So Wrong It's Right.
I just want to know how they got all these people in this movie. I mean, they're not the most expensive actors, but they're respected, well-known actors
Ron,
who are good at their craft.
It's Ron Perlman's production company. So
He can bring it.
I have to think like maybe they were able to schedule this just in like a.
It must have been a quick shoot. Maybe
Tom Lennon's
like
a really
shoot.
Busy guy. Yeah,
yeah,
maybe they would just happened all these. Actors happen to have this narrow availability. Ian McShane is working all the time, you know, so it must have just been an availability thing.
Yeah. I mean, I can't imagine it was a massive shooter, right? You know, time-wise.
Right. Maybe that's
how they kept the budget low. Maybe they actually were incredibly efficient in shooting, and they may have shot this in like 3 weeks.
Yeah, it's possible.
That could be how they were able to get all these guys for not a lot of money.
So let's do this question. The classic, is it so bad it's good? And I will go first. I'll take mine. For the first time ever, I'm going to say, I don't think this movie is so bad it's good. I think a big chunk of it is just great. I would say I would recommend it, although I would say you might want to be like doing something else while you're watching it. Like if you want to be like folding your laundry or wrapping presents or really doing anything else, and feel free to kind of tune out for the first like 15 minutes in the final 15. But once Thomas Lennon's character comes in, this movie is full on like a good time, I think. And that's my I laughed a lot at Thomas Lennon and Ian McShane and Ron Perlman in that
wish there was a little more Ron Perlman.
I would have taken even more Ron Perlman. Yeah. But the middle section of this movie, I really loved.
Yeah. I thought it was it wasn't terrible. I thought it was, like you said, the timeline stuff was great, but overall I just felt it was a little flat and a little, I don't know.
It's
weird. A little awkward.
It's weird, and yeah, I mean, it is. It's an awkward movie in a lot of stretches.
Yeah,
you know.
So overall, it was just a little. Didn't completely work, but I mean, it wasn't a terrible movie. I'd
recommend it. Would you agree that this is in the better tier of movies we've done?
Yeah, I mean, as I was watching it, sometimes you watch a movie and you're like, "How are we gonna do this one?" But I mean,
right.
Yeah, it was what it was.
Yeah, yeah. Jack?
Well, it's far from perfect. I didn't think it was terrible, but would I watch it again? I don't think so. Wasn't funny at points, yes, but I don't think it was funny enough. I think it could have been a lot better.
Yeah.
And that's my review. It's not bad at all. It was a good outing, but it was only about as good as a Christmas movie on DVD could be. And in that sense, they succeeded. And I was entertained, but I don't think I'd watch it again.
Man, I wish I could do an Australian accent.
By the way, Alter, how about the line where Tom Lennon says, "Let's go get some Forsters," and the crowd just stares at him. And
he goes, that was,
you
funny.
Know, Australian for
me. I mean, that was a really good moment.
Yeah.
Do we know at that point that he's faking being Australian?
No, not yet. It hadn't been revealed yet. Yeah. This story. No, this did have a lot of potential, and it was good for what it was, but I could see it being better.
Yeah.
If it hadn't been filmed so close to Syracuse, I don't know if I ever would have actually paid attention to it at all or watched it at all. But it is far better than many Christmas movies I've watched.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
It definitely has some entertaining points. And if nothing else, it's just kind of interesting to see that whole cast together.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I mean, like, this is probably, I feel like, one of the only times you're ever going to see, like, Tom Lennon doing crazy improv with Ian McShane.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, I don't think that's just something you're going to get to see all that much.
Until Pottersville 2.
Until Pottersville 2. I can only imagine the Furries Return.
Yeah.
I think, and in a weird kind of way, this is also a movie I think I would recommend to a lot of film fans, even if I would preface them of saying, like, there's issues here, like, and there's some...
Maybe it's not terrible.
Like, I would almost tell people, like, you know what, you should watch it and see what you think of it, like, in that weird kind of way.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of movies we do here where I'd be like, no, don't see it. Like, you're it's not worth even trying. But, like, this one, I'd be like, I don't know, maybe people should try it.
Yeah, I mean, it's a low-budget movie, you know.
Yeah.
That kind of... Yeah, it's just a low-budget movie.
Yeah.
For a low-budget movie, it's, you know, fine.
Yeah. Yeah.
There you go.
So, and coming... This is one where we do get to tease our next movie, because one of us has already seen it.
That's right.
Yes.
One of us has seen half of it, and it's pretty crazy. It is called The Double. It is on Netflix right now. Hopefully it's still on Netflix by the time we put this out. With Topher Grace and Richard Gere. It is the Topher Grace, Richard Gere movie everyone has been asking for. It is a spy thriller.
I don't know if you can really say that.
Yeah. Assassination plot. Like,
conspiracy. It's a CIA movie.
It's a CIA. The CIA is involved.
According to Ancestry.com, I am related to Richard Gere.
Really? Interesting.
Maybe you can get him on the podcast.
By blood or by marriage?
I will tell you, this movie desperately needed someone to play a young Richard Gere, so maybe they should have called you.
You look sweet. Yeah.
If you want to stay ahead with us, that's going to be coming up. And actually, we have a couple in the pipeline that are, as soon as they hit some form of video.
Coming up on 150, too. I have to look. what number we're
on. We should review 150 movies.
Yeah.
We should marathon them, for charity. We should each like take a shift, and we'll just watch all the movies that we've reviewed, like start to finish, and we just do like a running commentary.
I will.
Where you know you can go.
Can I take the early ones before I started, so I don't have to watch some of them again.
We don't have to all be there at the same time, but you just like you switch out. You do like schedule. We can have some crossover.
This movie will be number 148. So
okay,
and two movies will be our 150.
All right, we'll have to think.
Please
of
don't
something
take credence in that thing I just teased. It's probably not going to happen.
Somewhere down the road, there's two movies we've done before that I really think we should do again. I think Cody probably knows which
two. I know one
two.
Of them.
Here's another hint, and this is for you two and for viewers at home. Very exciting. Guy Lafarge is in The Double. So
is he playing Guy Lafarge?
He could be. It's that he's not playing Guy Lafarge, if that helps. 88 minutes in Sucker Punch. I think somewhere down the road we've got to do again.
I miss Sucker Punch.
The 88 minutes podcast was like perfection.
It is so good. I know.
It's like our masterpiece.
I love. I still have that movie on my shelf. I love it so much.
It's good.
All right. So yeah, we'll be back soon with The Double, and we'll think of something special for 150. All right. See you next time. Bye.